Welcome to Venturi's Voice. I'm Andy Davis. Venturi's Voice brings together thought leaders from a variety of industries who are taking the most innovative approaches to leadership and staffing. Imagine having a mix of experienced mentors sharing their secrets on leadership, recruiting, onboarding, engagement, and motivating, as well as stories on life lessons they've learned along the way. And it's free. If you're the head of a major corporation leading a team of hundreds or about to take on your first leadership role, this podcast is for you. This show is about you, and we're here to help you become the best leader you can be. Stay up to date with the latest shows by subscribing on iTunes and SoundCloud, as well as signing up to the newsletter at venturi-group.com, where you can find the latest IT jobs, talent, and blogs on all things leadership, staffing, and development. I'd love to hear from you, so drop me a line anytime via email at andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback or requests are always welcome. Enjoy the show.
Today's guest is Pete Hallett, Chief Technical Officer at Methods. Yeah, I'm looking forward to the conversation, mate. I know there's kind of a lot of different things I do want to kind of pick your brains about, but when did you, I suppose, start getting interested in technology? And I suppose if you were to look back at what you've achieved to this day, do you sometimes sort of shake your head and think, I would have never guessed that I would have ended up doing some of the things that I'm doing now?
I guess I can take you on a potted history of my life in technology. The shaking my head at it is probably something that I don't consider because I guess I was always into technology. Right back to when I guess my parents bought me a Spectrum 48K when I was 4 or 5 years old. I was immediately, outside of playing games and things, trying to write the code for that. I used to subscribe to a magazine called Input, if you were old enough to remember. That allowed me to, write basic code, on a computer, probably pre 10 years old, where that kind of progressed, and I kind of really found out that I enjoyed kind of the writing of software and the development. Right through from then, kind of, using BBC Basic during my school years, and in a little bit of time with an Acorn Archimedes, instructing it to drive a turtle with a pen around the floor, if anybody remembers that. From that point onwards, I guess my first kind of interaction with what we would call a PC these days was kind of in like secondary education, or just like maybe college and beyond. Would have been like a 386 PC, which had a special turbo button when we were compiling code. So yeah, I guess that was like obviously fully into computers all the way through my kind of youth and education. Bit of gaming in there as well, I guess. There was stuff with like the Atari 2600 when I was young, maybe the Sega consoles, you might recognize some of those, with like the Master and the Mega Drive, into a bit of PlayStation, got me into understanding, the experience of users playing games or, trying to interact with technology, at a basic level in those days, I guess.
Right. So you always kind of, I guess, it's always been an interest technology, whether games was a part of it as well. You were interested in gaming.
I did a bit of gaming. I never did a lot of gaming. I did like a bit of Sonic the Hedgehog and things like that when I was 10 to 15 or something like that, to supplement my education. I was always there thinking I'm going to do something computer related. I was very inquisitive. I would always take apart any of the toys that I was bought when I was younger, try and put them back together again, sometimes with random success rates, should we say.
And it's interesting, isn't it? It's like a curious about how do things work. And it's quite interesting now because do you think that we're at a stage where there's so many people use things that they have no idea how they actually work? I feel like before technology was around, sort of everyone had like a good fundamental understanding about how things actually worked, and it kind of made sense of it. Whereas now we use things on a daily basis that we probably have no idea how things work. And I suppose someone like you doesn't allow that to be the case.
You say that, but I think there's still an awful lot of taking for granted nowadays. With myself as well, you know, I am, as I sit here on a Mac with an iPhone next to me and an Apple Watch on, you know, it's kind of a little advertisement for Apple there. You know, it's like they're just things I take for granted in my day-to-day life, as I'm sure lots of people do. I like to understand, I think, how things fit together and kind of the technologies used to build some of the things I interact with on these devices. But, you know, it's still, I guess it's this just that everyone seems to take it for granted these days, I need to say.
Yeah. Are you still fascinated, in the same way that you, I suppose you were earlier on in your career about new things, the latest and greatest and kind of figuring out how they work? Do you think you still have that same level of enthusiasm?
I think so. I think I do. I think there might be a little bit of consumerism added to it in this day and age. I'm not necessarily, you know, trying to unbolt everything that's kind of around me. A lot of things are sealed these days, aren't they? So, but from a technology perspective, you know, I really enjoy, you know, finding out about how things kind of work, or you know, what sort of platforms things are built on from, you know, the technology that sits on my devices, why that works the way it does, and you know, how they get to the point of that becoming, you know, an experience for the user. I suppose that's the things I like to focus on these days.
So how much has that kind of journey changed then from, I suppose, when you were working more hands-on to the leadership role that you kind of have now?
So I guess there's a definite journey that I went on. It's probably not answering the question, but kind of something I would like to talk about is the kind of, I finished education. I was dead set the fact that I was going to be a software developer. I kind of learned to do software the right way. And I became a very kind of introvert developer, I guess. And my first few jobs were very much the, someone would say, we need this, you know, I'd get a job ticket. It'd be write this piece of code to do exactly these things. I'd do that in a stereotypical way in my darkened room, throw it back out of the room kind of as done. You know, I really, really loved writing code and kind of seeing the impact of that when it gets deployed, but very much like a do the job and then it's done kind of from that perspective. It took a few years, I think, for me to start thinking, well, you know, who is this impacting and, you know, what happens, who's asking for this work and all that kind of thing. And I guess that allowed me to kind of get into the, I started being a bit, to use a phrase from last year, I guess, a bit disruptive. I always enjoyed kind of stepping out of that, forcing myself out of the darkened developer room and trying to get involved in like the pipeline of work coming into development teams that I was working in, you know, to make the life easier of the people that were asking the questions because they're going straight to someone technical and, you know, helping to shape products. I guess that was something that really kind of, that was like kind of a key highlight or kind of a distinguishing factor for me in my career, where I started trying to, you know, really make the right product for the people asking for it, as well as like reducing the ambiguity of requirements coming into the development room from the business. You know, if it comes via a proxy, I don't know, project manager or something, sometimes, you know, it's had, you know, two heads on it, so it's, you know, not necessarily directly from the source. And I always love to kind of push back, challenge at the outset, as opposed to waiting for it to hit a development team, be able to challenge it then. Which is kind of where I got to with my career, I guess. I was working for an asset management company. When was that? Probably like in the early part of 2007. The company actually went bust. After a couple of weeks after the company went bust, one of the directors came to me and said, "Hey, would you like to start a business, a software business? Would you like to be, you know, the development director of a company?" And I was, you know, that was kind of my first. Oh, you know, I don't have to be just, I always say just the developer, but you know what I mean? Have other kind of strings to my bow, kind of explore the commercial aspects of delivering software.
Yeah, so, I suppose how challenging, sorry, was that for you at the time? Was it quite intimidating?
Absolutely. I ran away and hid for a good amount of time. You know, I was like, there's no way that I can do the other things. I hated at the time talking to people. You know, it was just not in my nature. I enjoyed writing really good code and, you know, developing great software, but I couldn't do the eye contact thing. I really hated the kind of the human interaction almost. I ran away and hid, thought about it for a while, spoke to a few people and then came back and I was like, you know, this is an opportunity for me to, just kind of bring myself out of my shell, I guess. So that went ahead and we started a company in 2007. So.
Yeah, well, you kind of went all the way in, didn't you? You didn't just take on a management role. You actually started a company. You know, obviously, myself been involved with startups in the past. Always fascinated by that kind of entrepreneurial journey. What was that kind of experience like?
Yeah, so I mean, from doing the startup thing, it was. I guess that was the thing that kind of brought me out of my shell. I did rate myself as a great developer in those days, big headed or anything, but but I kind of it added to all those things, understanding the commercial reasons why you do things, understanding it forced me to kind of get out there, speak to people, find out, starting with user needs as we do in government, finding out what it is that people really, really need from the product you're building. You know, we really went from ground zero, like day zero was, we had nothing. Someone had an idea of a product to build. I was nominated person to write the code in the early days. I wrote the first nearly million lines of code myself, I was really about kind of, I guess that was the period of life where we had a product idea, but we didn't really have a product yet. So it was very stressful in the first few months to try and get, a prototype or an alpha of that product out. But it gave me it really got me into kind of the ways we work now, which is like the agile way of working, kind of, having to iterate, build and iterate really quickly and learn from the people that really want this, and really learn how to fail quickly, because when you're doing it in a startup environment, the cash is limited. So it really got me into kind of the ways that we work in this day and age, but under really tight constraint of the agile working, and learning about what people, trying to deliver software that really, really meets the needs of the users that are going to be using it.
Interesting. And was it kind of a mixture of not just working in an agile way on the technology side, but also kind of a lean way of working on the business side?
Absolutely. It was, like I said, we had a limited amount of money, an idea, a potential client if we were able to deliver on this product. So we had, in the start, there was, four of us in the business that kind of were the kind of the founders. And we just had to get that idea off the ground in the best way possible, and in a way that kind of made foundation for the business and for the product, which went on to be a five year existence of many things, one of which I'd call a lot of stress, especially when you start to scale a little bit, and you get more customers and you're in charge of a product then that's kind of being used in the real world and people are using to benefit their businesses. It's quite daunting, I guess, for where I was at the time, in my late 20s, it was just a little bit, the stress was immense at the time, I guess, but it was, really rewarding in the end. There was a thing, we built a product, we built a business, we went to, some areas in the world that I never got to go to and I wouldn't have got to go to that wasn't for that. If I want to look back, it's a great period of life.
Oh yeah, it's an incredible journey, I suppose, and it's interesting you brought up, the stress thing. I read, did you see the Elon Musk quote that he was interviewed in the other week? I think it was like Business Insider or something, but obviously, he was just talking about the businesses that he built, and talks about the big highs, but then the massive lows and the just continued stress with building a business. I'm sure that's something you can relate to. And how long did it take where you felt like the stress had been reduced a little bit, or did it ever get there?
I like how long did it take? I was like, we're now, what I know, it's 10 years later now and I'm still there, I think. I think the stress has changed. There was definitely continued stress throughout that period of life for me. Whether that was the fact that we needed to meet a deadline, and at the time, I was in my late 20s, so there was stress around the FOMO effect. A lot of my friends in their late 20s were just getting into proper jobs, and they were out doing lots of things, going to places. My life was the business at that time, so I guess that was a stress factor, in the fact that I was missing out
on, you know, the, what my, you know, my friends and things were doing.
Oh yeah, I mean, that's that must have been you know, a huge part of it. I would have thought. I mean, it's sacrifice, isn't it? You know,
yeah.
But I'm sure. I'm sure you feel that it's worth it now, though, right?
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, we had a 5-year plan. We ended up, I want to say, selling the business after 5 years in about 3 months. So, you know, we weren't too far off. It was a massively stressful time. It was an amazing learning experience for me. It introduced me to the, oh, look, there are other people that aren't just the development team that want to use this software and want to use it to kind of make their lives better. Which kind of, I guess, set me up for, you know, kind of where we're at now with Methods, you know, from a consulting point of view, helped me to kind of do the talking to people that are going to be using the software and deliver things that they really need.
And do you still find it easy, I suppose, to get motivated, you know, on the current project, or, you know, are you kind of, have your motivations changed? You're still just as motivated, I suppose, but your motivations for things have they changed over the years, or do you still feel that you know it's the same sort of things that get you out of bed in the morning?
I guess it's slightly different now. You know, I so at Methods now I look after the entire technical community, so I try to aim at, you know, all of that community kind of being happy, being able to interact with each other across the entire business as well as with our customers. So I guess my motivations now are kind of twofold, in that I'm trying to kind of set vision and strategy for our business as well as for our customers, and doing that there's an entire technical community that I'm not trying to dictate them at all, but I feel like, you know, we all work together to kind of get the Methods messaging correct, and you know, that working, and, you know, that kind of just doing its thing in a kind of autonomous fashion is, you know, that's the thing that really get me going now. Like, you know, I really enjoy getting up and coming to work, because, you know, we do have a really good team here, and it's really good to see it when it's working. You know, that's the thing that makes me tick.
Yeah, it's kind of like the people side of it, isn't it? It's like almost like what you were saying earlier about the transition into kind of a management role. It's like, it's interesting that transition is now, you know, kind of seems like it's the very thing that, you know, still keeps you motivated and sort of engaged.
Absolutely. So, I mean, when I had a little bit of time out after we sold the company, and I joined Methods, you know, slightly later, after having a complete break from work at all. When I came into Methods, I joined as a product manager when that was like 3.5 years ago, working on one of the projects they had going on with the local council at the time. You know, and that kind of that was kind of my introduction to I guess government digital transformation, which is I guess our core line of business here at Methods. And I just quickly saw that, you know, I wanted to kind of, I guess, I don't want to say climb, but there's not much hierarchy. But I mean, you know, I really wanted to kind of have an influence over the technical aspects of what we did. So yeah, I guess that was the kind of route to wanting to get to here, I guess, where we're there to here over the last few years.
And I always like to ask about technology. I'm fascinated by it still. When you look at it, you maybe look at some of the things you guys are working on, or, you know, just your own kind of interest in technology. What do you look at now, I suppose, that's right around the corner that you think is going to be a potential game changer, or something that's just, you know, really exciting for you?
Yeah, so I guess that's, I'm going to do a really corporate answer here, I think, because I don't think there's anything new right now, and it's probably the wrong way of describing it, but I think there's a few lines of technology that we look at here, which I feel kind of fit the mold for where, especially we working in government, are trying to transform that space at the moment. You know, we have pure software engineering, which has changed so much. There's so many frameworks that you can use now, you know, meaning you can, you know, code things from the ground. You don't really have to code things from the ground up anymore. You know, there's so many frameworks you can just, you know, there's people that have already done a lot of the things, you know, like the typical Apple saying, you know, there's an app for that. Well, you know, in open source software development, there's generally someone who's tried to do the thing you're doing before. So, you know, you can pick up what they're doing with open sourcing. You know,
there's things that are there in places like GitHub where you can grab something that someone started. You can even make changes to it. Submit pull requests to say, hey, wouldn't this be a good feature for your piece of software? Allowing you to build software, I guess, much more rapidly, which is great, because I'm from a software development background, so it's lovely to see how those sorts of things have evolved, and you can use new some of the cool new languages like Python. You can mix that up with some of the old languages, the legacy, make really cool new things. Another side to, I guess, what I find quite exciting is all of the as a service things. AWS is kind of dominating at the moment, their ecosystem. You can spin up a server, push of a button, build a server from a template. So, I've got hundreds of templates of servers there, which cherry pick the capabilities they've got, from things like storage, security, even like artificial intelligence and machine learning, and add them to your solution. With no servers at all, just like in the ecosystem. You can do that, and you can do that all in code. So you can literally have a fully coded project now, which is repeatable again and again. In kind of in line with that, here we kind of look at the low and no code platforms. We do a lot of work in the Salesforce space. So you've got a platform that kind of allows you to deliver value, right out of the box, but then you can configure and customize it to really meet needs of customers that come to us. The commoditized aspect of those things. You pay for all these things nowadays, by user, by month, or by use. It really allows like our clients to kind of do things more cheaply. Allows the kind of the tech community to be a lot more innovative. And test things for free. Which you never would have been able to do in the past. So you can test things out for free, it's not just big companies now that can develop, software products. Like good developers can, do it at a fraction of the cost. Being a bit of a data person, I've always been kind of in the data space myself. Like the machine learning and things like the Internet of Things and wearable tech. Those are the things that I guess really get me excited, and like the kind of analysis of data and using it to kind of make good products. We're even starting to recommend these sorts of things in the government space. So a lot of government exists around, assessing the risk of people, of applications, anything like that. So you can really recommend to use the machine learning there to make that process much slicker now, even with government.
So, very comprehensive answer, but very well articulated. I appreciate that. Pete, I won't keep you for too much longer. I've really enjoyed it. And as you were saying, I could actually talk forever and ever, but I know that it's Friday and we have to go home at some point. So with that said, I'll leave you to enjoy the weekend. And thanks for taking the time, mate.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. Please make sure you subscribe at iTunes or SoundCloud, or check out the website venturi-group.com and keep up to date with the latest IT jobs, talent, news, and podcasts. Or drop me a line. It's andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback, topics, or guest suggestions are always welcome. And thanks again for listening to the show. See you next time.